Thank you, Gary. You know, every life has its blessing to the rest of us. I don't know Gary well. Every time I meet him, he just seems to be this happy, cheerful man. It's fun to be around people like that. And people bring so much balance and perspective to our lives. Brian, you told that mountain lion story yesterday morning. I really got into that story. You were headed through that thing, and I'm thinking, this is going to make national news. I mean, this has to. This is really good. I'm thinking, and when you got the thing in the door and you're pushing on that door, I'm thinking, if you would, one of the times when he's back pulling, just let go, and then you'll have your problem solved, okay? And then I'm thinking, no, I live 2 hours from now, and if you let go of that thing, I'm never going to relax again. I loved living out in the woods and doing things in the woods. And if you let go of that thing, I'm never going to relax again. Don't get the bow. I'm really buying into this. Where is that bow? Come on, get that thing. I am never going to relax again if he lets that thing loose. And then finally they got it. Oh, what a relief. And his dreams end better than mine. Mine would have probably been something like the thing came the rest of the way in. And that's when I get awake and grab the covers like, oh, I love my bed so much. It's so wonderful to be alive. I'm just glad I'm back in the land of reality. It's so, oh, I love this bed. Jesus said one time when he was talking to his disciples, oh, fools and slow of heart to believe. It was after they were on the road to Damascus, and he was... I did a study on that one time. Do you know what it means? We're given to our five natural senses so much that we forget and aren't spiritually sensitive to the reality that lion has already gotten the larger segment of the population. And when he ran off into the woods the first time, in the world of spiritual realities, he lives close by. And Jesus says, I don't mind if you sense natural things. I mean, if the lion's coming through the door, it's okay for the family to be worked up. That's all right. I think that's fine. You're given, you understand your five senses. But the deeper realities, I hope you get that too. Today my message is going to be on insecurities. I think we probably all deal with it. At least most of us, if not all of us, deal with insecurities. And I enjoy singing. I remember one time as a schoolboy, we were going to school and I was just singing my heart out. And one of the students said to the teacher, who I really liked, my teacher, lady teacher, he said to her, Melvin sings, sounds like a girl when he sings. And the teacher said, yeah, he does. I will never sing again. Not me. You ain't catching me singing again. I sound like a girl. And then the years go by and I'm singing beside a fellow phone team member, and he just looks at me, and when we're done singing, his brother, he said, I love your tenor. I just love listening to you sing. And then, well, maybe I have something to contribute, right? So then, one of the young men in our church is teaching course to our youth group, and he said, you young people need to learn to sing like Brother Mel. Just sing. And this guy sings in Oasis. So I think, well, maybe I've got something to give. Like, maybe I really have something to give. And maybe God might have something for me after all. And so I'm just singing along. And the song leader starts a song. And I'm just having a blessed time singing. And after I quit listening to myself and start listening to everybody else, I realize they're on another tune. I am never going to sing again. Ever. Insecurities. It hit me yesterday, halfway through the sermon. I thought, you know what? I'm not on top of my game here. There's some of the things that should have in my head better, and I'm not saying it right, and I'm not getting the point across. And I preached this before, and so I'm not as inspired as I was the last time. And I started to feel very insecure. And while I'm preaching, and while you probably don't know what's going on, I'm crying out to the Lord and thinking, Lord, you better save this thing. I need some help. Well, it goes back to one time I stood up to preach. And I got partway through the sermon, and I couldn't think of anything else to say. Nothing. So I went and sat down. Insecurities. I'll never preach again. By the way, about every message or every Bible school that I teach, at some point, I decided this is the last time. This will be the last sermon. This is the last Bible school. I don't know why I put myself through this kind of stuff. I don't know why I do it. I've got to learn to do a better job of saying no. Next year, it's N-O. That solves the problem. I'll go out in the woods and live. I like it in the woods. No one bothers me. There's no insecurities there. I can sit in a tree. I can look at the sky and the clouds and the bees and everything. And nothing is a... I can't wait. I bet some of you have insecurities. I bet some of my girls have been insecure just being here with all you folks, because they don't know you and you don't know them. And new people are scary. I'll tell you one of my daughter Rebecca, because right now she's probably starting to feel insecure. Dad's going to tell one on her. My daughter is a very capable girl. A tremendous blessing in her home. She carries herself like a queen. And she's a hard worker. Very kind. Very sweet. But somewhere during the week, she sent a text to Mom and said, Mom, the girls are asking me things about head coverings, and will you help? Mom? I'm thinking, oh boy, I know Rebecca. She is about as comfortable right now as a chipmunk in a cat's mouth. Theology is not her thing. I can see her down there like, theology, theology, theology. And she's grasping around her mind for like, theology, got it. My brother caught something in a trap one time, and I bet it was theology. Theology, yeah, I bet it was. See, God gifted us all with something to give. He also crippled us all enough that we need each other and God. So I think insecurities are probably from God to pull us back to God. So I went back to my childhood and thought of our youth group one time. We were sharing together. We just got an honest discussion, discovered that almost everyone in the youth group had something they felt insecure about. For the one girl, they had a handicapped brother. Just made her feel, you know, just like our family has always been different. And for the next young person, it was this, and for me, it was that. And after a while, I discovered, you know what? This is a pretty common problem in humanity. I remember at that time, we had gone through some, I had anyway, going through some teaching and insecurity. So I went back 30 years and dug up some of the questions or some of the things that we can't change in our lives. We have no control over. One of them is our parents, who our parents are. How many of you picked your parents? You're a rare bird if you got to pick your parents. And you have to live with these folks. Ever since Adam and Eve failed, God has worked through flawed or imperfect parents. Their imperfect imperfections, the good news, has been passed on to us. Philippians 2:13, "For it is God which worketh in you both the will and to do of His good pleasure." My time and place in history, we can learn from past generations, but God has called us to live now. And I'm actually kind of glad. I'm okay with that. I don't struggle with my time. My wife has looked at me and said before, because I'm clearing some mountain ground, trying to turn the farm ground, she said, you missed about 200 years. You should be back, a long ways back. But I don't really struggle with that. I enjoy living today. You can use big equipment if you need to pull a stump. You know, I'm not really into digging irons and an old mule to get a stump out of the ground. I like living in today. So I don't really struggle with that one. But you are here, young people, for today. Esther had her day. Joseph had his day. David had his day. And you have your day. You're here for today. My racial background. One of the blessings that we have is all races come from one set of parents. Every single one of us come from a set of parents. When we can accept our racial backgrounds and thank God for it, we are much better able to accept and appreciate other backgrounds. Accepting who God created us to be causes us to appreciate. Somebody, I want you young men to look up some verses for me. Galatians 3:28 and 29. Who's got that? Right here in the front. I'm just going to go through here. Psalm 139:16. Right here, brother. Okay. Job 10:8-9. Right there. Isaiah 44:2. Over in the right. And then in the back, you. Put your hand back up. Okay, you. Isaiah 44:24. Hang on to that, and as we get to them through the lesson here, let me see if I got other verses I want read. Okay. Galatians 3:28-29. Accepting who God created us to be. Go ahead and read it. Amen. We don't have any choice over who our brothers and sisters are. Accepting our brothers and sisters and their handicap and their failures and their idiosyncrasies. Cain did not accept his brother and his better offering. One of the blessings I've found over the years is learning to appreciate others. And my brother has a different personality than me. I tend to be a little more prophetic, and my brother tends to be more of a mercy personality. And I can, when people need counseling and they want to know that somebody cares about them, do you know what they do? They drive by my driveway to my brother's house. And I don't feel insulted by that. My brother has his gifts, and God gave me my gifts, and I'm glad that people lean on my brother if they really want to feel cared about. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't all offer and seek to be caring individuals, but if other brothers and sisters in your church have more gifts than you, you ought to be grateful that they're covering territory that you don't have time to cover. God has given you enough of your own real estate to deal with. Accepting our family can cause us to grow in gentleness and long suffering. Brother Brian, I didn't get to meet your son yet. Our brotherhood has raised 100 children in the last 20 years. And we have not had a single handicapped child. And I remember a brother saying, I go out into other congregations and preach. And I said, there's 2 to 3 children in wheelchairs. And then our granddaughter was born. Severely handicapped child, probably won't live much into her 20s. Deals with pain, Rett syndrome, doesn't have strong muscle tone, in pain every time she goes in her diaper. And I look at that little girl. I think of Jesus' words, as much as ye have done it unto the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me. It's raised all kinds of questions in my mind, like, this child won't ever be blood bought. What about other babies who die before they're old enough to accept the blood? It's questions I know that God's got it figured out, and I'm okay with that. But apparently there's people in heaven who are... But they teach us things sometimes about God that we need to know. I don't understand. I don't have all the answers to life. And when a child 3 years old is hurting, God, where are you? As much as you have done it unto the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me. I can just see Jesus someday, for those of you who have ministered, coming up to you and shaking your hand. Remember me? I felt your compassion all the way. Thank you. Physical features. Have you ever looked in the mirror and said, something's got to be done? It's either too big or too little or too pimply or too fat or too scared or too bold or too... Something's got to be done. I bet you haven't. I bet you have. Mental abilities. First Corinthians chapter 2. And I, brethren, when I came to you, came not with excellency of speech or wisdom, declaring to you the testimony of God, for I determined not to know anything among you, save Jesus Christ and Him crucified. I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling, and my speech and my preaching was not with enticing words of man's wisdom, but in the demonstration of Spirit and power. And when Paul wrote that, I read it and I said, you got to be kidding me. And then I thought, if that man of God struggled with insecurities, what about us? Well, the good news is, it gives Jesus Christ the ability. Listen here. That your faith should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. Oh. That's why we have insecurities. That's why the man most used by God has wrestled deeply
And he gave it back to Jesus. And then God finally was able to do something.
Aging and death, we have no opportunity to change these kind of things. I know when my wife started first finding gray hairs, she started picking them out. But you get that ain't last so long. Or after a while, you're going to get bald. And you're going to get old. And the youth and the vigor and the strength you had that you folks have right now, that's all. And I hear old men struggling because they no longer can do the things they did. And I realize we don't get away from this thing. Questions for consideration. Psalm 90:12 says, "Teach me, O Lord, to number my days." Doesn't aging and death help us do that? Questions for consideration. Does God design and build? Psalm 139:16. Who has that?
And I had to see myself in yet being imperfect. And in that book, all my members were written, which in continuance were fashioned, yet when as yet there was none of them.
God designed me. Job 10:8-9.
Thy hands have made me and fashioned me together round about, yet thou dost destroy me. Remember, I beseech thee, that thou hast made me as a clay, and wilt thou bring me into dust again?
God designed me. There was more things going on there, though, than just that. Isaiah 44:2.
Thus saith the Lord, that made thee, and formed thee from the womb, which will help thee. Fear not, O Jacob, my servant, and thou Jeshurun, my chosen.
Fear not. God made me. Isaiah 44:24. And we look in the mirror, saying, God, what in the world were you thinking? Abraham Lincoln said one time, God must like common people. Well, so why did he make so many of us? God must like common people. Well, so why did he make so many of us? So, God allows this. And girls go around and they know that guys are attracted to pretty girls. So they all want to be pretty. And God, what are you doing? You're messing my life up. And guys, they go around and they all want to be cool. And they're not smart enough to be cool, so they try. God finds it hard to use a man or woman who leans on themselves . Paul said, most gladly, therefore, why glory in infirmities, because Jesus said this, my strength is made perfect in whose weaknesses? Ours. Young people, your thorns can be turned into usefulness for the kingdom of heaven. And not only that, your thorns can be turned into the greatest blessing of security in your Jesus. There's times you're going to feel insecure, and it will draw you to the one who understands. Can God transform our disappointments into blessing? In 1912, Ina Dooley Ogden received an invitation to the Chateauguay Circuit. And if you're not familiar with that, up in New York in the beautiful backwoods country, there was a beautiful lake called Lake Chateauguay. And they used to have weekends there where families would go there and spend a couple weeks just enjoying time of sharing together and maybe some good preaching and the nature and all that. And one time Ina was invited to go share a testimony, let's put it that way, with the folks that were there. And she was invited to come share, and she was excited. She's going to share Jesus, and she's going to be able to minister to thousands. And this was a great excitement in her life, and she's preparing for this excitement. And back in them days, they had, I think, what is called these critters. They were strange. They were automobiles. The first automobiles had just come out. And these strange creatures, her dad was in an accident with one of them, and he was hurt really bad, and she had to give up her dream and stay home and take care of her father. And it was disappointing. And she determined to surrender her disappointment to God and to be a blessing wherever she was. And while she was there taking care of her father and not living in the limelight, she wrote a song called Brighten the Corner Where You Are. How many of you have ever sang that song? I would like a song leader. Does any of you song leaders know that enough well to sing it? Maybe at the end of the service we can sing it. I don't think I'm going to get to my time limit anyway. That's the thing about being a preacher. I'm a farm boy, and I like the woods. And preaching for an hour, that looks like 7 miles out there. I don't know how to fill an hour up with just talking. I'm starting to feel my insecurities here. Can scars bring us blessings? I got scars all over this hand. This one here, I fell off a scaffolding wagon one time holding a sheet of metal, and I got about a 2-inch cut there. Right here, I was working on a big piece of heavy equipment one time, and the guy had warned me, when you work with heavy steel, don't put your fingers anywhere. You guys got that? When you work with heavy steel, don't put your finger in a bolt hole to make sure things are lined up. Because when that thing slips, it takes your finger off just as clean as nothing. I mean, your arm, your leg, it will do it. Heavy steel, so don't do that, okay? So I've been warned. So I'm working on an excavator, trying to get this big track back on. I've got a bulldozer hooked to it and a chain. I found out later you can't put the sprocket in on first. You got to go to the other end, pop that off, put the sprocket in on it, go down it. So anyway, I'm working in chains and pulling, and I'm thinking heavy steel. So I get a digger in there and a stick in. I tell my son to turn, rotate this thing to try to slip this track on. And when you're working with heavy steel, that thing. Anyway, another cut. Blood, running out, bleeding, trying to work. This one here, I was up in the mountain running on a chainsaw one time, and somewhere along the line, I cut me rather than the tree, and I got little scars all the way up this finger right here. This cut right here through my fingernail, I was thinking about dating a girl named my wife, and I was working along with the skill saw, and I run the skill saw right up through my fingernail, and so this poor hand has an interesting life. But my wife, one day, my son got a cut on his face, and my wife's in a panic. We're going to have to go to the doctor. It's going to break a scar. We don't want a scar. It's going to be on his face. And this little guy is just kind of a thinker little guy, and I always wanted a scar that would last a lifetime. Scars can be a badge of honor. Scars are neat. My buddy has a scar right on his face. I wish I had a scar. I had to say to him a couple weeks later, I'm sorry, son.
I don't think this is going to be a good quality scar. It's disappearing. God can use scars. Someday, we're going to meet Jesus face to face. And He's going to show us. We're going to say, "Where's your scars?" They paid the price of our redemption. Can God use your scars for His glory? The difficult things that you went through, the pain you experienced that none of us would even want to attempt to go through. Can God use your scars to minister in our day? Christ was perfect, but I would like you now to list some of the difficulties that Christ experienced. And before we do that, I want to go back to the subject I raised back in the first evening, the subject of pain. On gospel billboards, people call us about the question of pain. And many people say, if there is a loving God, why does He allow pain? I walked away from God when my mother died. I walked away from God when my best friend died. If there is a loving God, He would have never allowed that kind of thing to happen in my life. I don't believe in God. I'm telling you, that is a tough question. And I'm not sure if I'm going to give you all the answers, but I'm going to just share a little bit. We'll make an attempt. By the way, it doesn't matter whether you're an atheist, whether you don't believe in God, whether you are a Buddhist, any religion, no religion, don't believe in Christianity, you still got the problem of pain in your world. The question has been answered like this: naturalism. You and all that happens to you is an accident and therefore meaningless, whether you consider it good or bad. There is no way things ought to be, therefore you cannot say there is anything wrong. By the way, does anybody agree that when your little baby brother dies, that that's okay? It's not. It's not okay. If it's not okay, then there must be something bigger going on. Hinduism and Buddhism, it's your fault. You did something in a former life that created a bad karma that caused this. Islam, this is how they deal with pain. It is the will of Allah. Deal with it. He decided you were the one to be a doormat. Consider it an honor. New Age and Scientology, it's an illusion. You dreamed it up. By the way, your joy and happiness is also an illusion as well. And I ran into one of these guys a while back. We were talking on the phone and he said to me, we got on the subject of gravity. He said, everything is just a figment of your imagination. And we got on the subject of gravity. He said, that's just a figment of your imagination. I told him, sir, I fell off a building one time and I went 15 feet down and I hit the concrete. And I'm pretty sure that wasn't a figment of my imagination. I think it was reality. He was, no, that's a figment of your imagination. I wish later I would invite him over to my place and we could have had him jump off the house roof. And we would have had coffee together after that, and we would have discussed how this is just a figment of your imagination, and the splatted bones and broken legs and all this stuff, that's just a figment of your imagination. Sit here and enjoy your coffee, because it's just a figment of your imagination. Let's enjoy the coffee together. You know, it's just... Let's go back to Jesus. I'm not going to give you every answer today why there's pain. But I think that it has something to do with the fact that when God said, do not eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, that He meant that and it was serious business. If you eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and the day you wake up and you discover evil, don't go complaining.
When Eve woke up the day she discovered that her one son was a perpetrator and her other son was a victim. And she realized what it means to know not only good, but she knew what it meant to know evil. The reality that washed down over her. To disobey God is not a joke. We feel the consequences of it 2,000 years, 4,000 years, 6,000 years. We were in Hershey a while back, my wife and I, with one of our daughters born 3 months too soon. We lived in Ronald McDonald House over there and looked at that helicopters coming in day after day. That's a result of wanting to know what good and evil is. Someday there'll be no more hospitals and no more tears. But anyway, let's talk about Jesus. Tell me things about Jesus that He went through while He walked the earth. I would like you, boys and girls, anything you can think about Jesus that was painful. Back here. His friends abandoned Him. Rejection, the same thing. More. What were more things that Jesus experienced? While this is God walking with us on earth, what did God experience? Tempted. Mocked. He didn't have a house. Over here. Grief. He was hungry. How about he wasn't good looking? Go to Isaiah 53. He had no form or comeliness, and we shall see him. There's no beauty that we should desire him. If I read on down through Isaiah 53, if I remember correctly, it said he will never have children. God walking with us. God Himself went through pain. So whatever you think about God, He demonstrated that He's willing to come and walk with us through our pain. The pain that we created, He allowed Himself to come and walk with us in that. Insecurities. We had a sister a while back, young sister working in a ministry, and she called home to Mom one day. Mom, all the guys just try to be cool. All the girls are so needy. And the worst thing, Mom, is these girls just fling themselves at the guys and the guys just eat it up. And what's a girl who's trying to live righteous supposed to do, Mom? And Mom and Dad said, just stay the course. And eventually a young man came along and he noticed that she wasn't just given to neediness and frivolity and decided that's what he was looking for. Someone who didn't yield to their insecurities. I remember years ago, after some of those young guys were converted, and we started doing things as a youth group, and one of the girls just looked at us guys one day and said, we were so sick of you guys trying to be cool. It just brought, when we got to where Jesus began to meet our needs, it took away a lot of problems. I have a story here that I'm going to read, and I'm going to read it because this woman nailed what I'm trying to talk about here today. As a shy, awkward 12-year-old, I took the brunt of jeers and insults from my peers nearly every day of the week. I dreaded the bus ride to school for far more than getting shots at the doctor or having my braces tightened. Every day I was reminded I didn't have the right clothes, the right hair, the right lingo. My peers noticed everything that wasn't right about me and were constantly telling me how worthless I was. I was not attractive or confident like the popular girls, and every put down that was hurled my direction only made me more withdrawn and insecure. When we make feeling good about ourselves a focal point, we take our eyes off of Christ and become wrapped up in self. I often came home from school crying and miserable, convinced that my life was of very little value. My parents tried to comfort me and remind me of what my value to God and my family, but my self-image was so low I wasn't able to receive the words of encouragement. I was riddled with self-doubt and insecurities. Over the next few years, things began to change. Instead of being awkward and unpopular, I learned how to transform myself into the picture of female allure that the culture applauded. I observed girls at school who seemed to get all the positive attention from boys. I began to imitate them. I dressed and carried myself in a provocative way and gradually became skilled at flirting and sensuality. But despite my veneer of confidence, I was no less insecure and miserable than I'd been during my younger years. My outward charm was merely a cover-up for my inner self-doubt, and no matter how much male attention or popularity I achieved, inwardly I felt like I'd truly messed up. All I had to do was glance at the magazine covers and the grocery store checkout line to realize how far from the world's standard for beauty I was. So we see the inner beauty as a false solution. It was around this time that I began to hear a message that promised to solve all my insecurity woes and finally gave me the sense of confidence and purpose I craved. Finding my own inner beauty. Teachers, Christian leaders, commercials, all exhorted me to look inside and discover all the beauty you possess within. When we let self fade into the background and become consumed with Jesus Christ, our insecurities will melt away. Yet no matter how hard I tried to find my own inner beauty, I just didn't seem to work. When I looked at my life, I only saw my mistakes and shortcomings. Eventually, I began to realize that if I was ever going to gain freedom over the compromise and insecurity that had been controlling my life, I needed something far more powerful than anything I possessed inside myself. Finding my own inner beauty wasn't enough. I needed to look beyond myself for answers, and then I discovered what it meant to completely surrender my life to Jesus Christ and let Him take over every aspect. And that was when I finally gained the freedom and hope and confidence I've been desperately seeking. True freedom didn't come through self-realization, but through self-denial. Confidence and joy flowed into my life, not when I learned to appreciate my own unique qualities, but when I encountered the cross of Jesus Christ and let it transform every part of my existence. I began to exchange self-confidence for Christ's confidence. Insecurity is a struggle that countless men and women today can relate to. Whether you're ridiculed in childhood by peers or family members, used and abused by men, or simply influenced by the impossible standards of Hollywood, you've probably been affected by the "you're not good enough" message in one way or another. But contrary to what we often believe, learning how to feel good about ourselves is not the solution to overcoming insecurity. Yes, it is important to understand how precious we are in God's sight, so valuable, in fact, that He gave His only Son to rescue us. We should value our lives because, and this is how I even answer with homosexual callers, I'll say to them, they say, "Well, God is a God of love, and I love my partner." And I just say to them, "God is a God of love so much that He sent His own Son to die that we can be delivered." Yes, it is important to understand how precious we are in God's sight. So valuable, in fact, He gave His only Son to rescue us. We should value our lives because we are made in the image of God. We are His creation. His love for us is truly unfathomable. And as Christian women, we are daughters of the King, redeemed, made into royalty through the work of the cross. And yet when you make feeling good about ourselves a focal point, we take our eyes off of Christ and become wrapped up in self. Jesus said, "If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me." To deny ourselves according to the biblical pattern literally means to lose sight of ourselves and our own interests. We will only gain lasting security when we look away from ourselves and toward Jesus Christ. The question, "Who am I?" is not nearly as important as the question as, "Who is He?" It may seem hard to believe, Let's back up here a little bit. The only real beauty or merit we can ever have is Jesus Christ. It may seem hard to believe that self-denial rather than self-esteem could be the solution to insecurity. But when we let self fade into the background and become consumed with Jesus Christ, our insecurities will melt away. We no longer look to ourselves, our own merit, talent, beauty, or uniqueness to find confidence. Instead, we learn to find our confidence in who He is rather than who we are. Charles Spurgeon said this, "If a soul has beauty, it is because Christ has endowed that soul with His own. For in ourselves we are deformed and defiled. There is no beauty in any of us but what our Lord has worked in us. Many of us have been told that we have all the beauty within us, and if we could only discover our beauty, we would be confident and happy. But the reality is, as Spurgeon so straightforwardly put it, we do not possess any beauty or godliness of our own accord." See Psalm 14:3, 16:2, 53. The only real beauty or merit we can ever have is Jesus Christ. Do you struggle with insecurity? Don't become distracted with trying to build up your own self-confidence. Instead, turn your life completely and wholly over to the author of all that is lovely and pure. Let His divine radiance come cascading through you. Then you will glow with a heavenly beauty that will never fade away and gain a Christ-centered confidence that cannot be shaken. And I'm telling you, young people, if you nail this one the same way this woman nailed it, there will be a lot more peace in your youth groups. The guys will stop trying to be cool. And the girls will stop trying to compete. And there'll be a lot more friendliness and good cheer and happiness. And rest in your youth group if you nail this like this woman did. Another girl wrote, "I was 29, I was living depression. And one day I decided to just write little notes for people. So I wrote to my parents and thanked them for the blessings they were to me. And I wrote to my dentist and thanked them for working on my teeth. And an older sister in the church who always had blessed our congregation, I wrote her a note and just thanked her for how she has ministered to us over the years. And the next time she met that older sister, she came weeping with tears and blessed me. And a few months later, she died. And I discovered one day that my depression was gone. Because instead of focusing on myself and my insecurities, I was focusing on ministering and being a blessing to others in the small ways that God gave me. And I found life. And what does the Bible say? He that loses his life shall find it." When Jesus Christ purchased you, He purchased you as is. How many of you have ever gone to a farm sale and bought a piece of equipment as is? When you buy a piece of equipment as is, sometimes you get some surprises. And it's more than as is. And there might be things that don't work that you thought worked. When Jesus Christ purchased you, He purchased you as is. All the problems, all the brokenness, all the insecurities. He paid with His blood, purchased you as is. Ye are not your own. You were bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God with your life.
Thank you for listening to this message. We trust that it has been a blessing to you. If you would like additional sermons or a catalog, please visit our website at effortofministries.org. Call us toll-free at 855-557-8255. 7902 or write to us at Ephrata Ministries, 400 West Main Street, Suite 1, Ephrata, Pennsylvania, 17522. You are welcome to copy this message for free distribution. This ministry is supported by your donations. May the Lord Jesus bless you.